Up here. All right. Is that appropriate? Not allowed to say that. All right. Wow, Tim, thank you. It's funny, we were talking a little bit this week and just the memories. He's exactly right. As soon as we get face to face, it's like, boom, get on the phone, boom. And those were some amazing memories. They are some amazing memories. And I love coming and when you bring your kids out and we get to connect and catch up. And we were sitting there talking in the back, and how come we don't do that more? I mean, it's just life. Life just gets going. And I'm grateful to have the connections like that. Very, very grateful. I also want to say thank you from the Bath of the Swamp. I came and just kind of inserted the video into, I meant to ask earlier, and I was talking with Tim and some others, I said, you know, play the video, and I just kind of walked in and said, can we do it? And I was like, yeah, it's all right. So I had this kind of spiel for the whole Camp Swamp 25th anniversary, so all I'll just say is be there, it's going to be a party. The thing I want to say, though, is I can't say enough how grateful I and everybody involved in Swamp appreciates Cornerstone and the fact that you have been such a stalwart pillar for the Swamp for so many years with so many things. And I'm not talking I'm talking prayers, resources of your time and energy, your ideas, counselors, you bring your kids, it's an amazing thing. And I extend to you a sincere thank you, and also the fact that you get to be a part of something. I take it personal as like, I want everybody to understand what's happening, not only just with the camp. I think we're almost at 29,000 kids that have come through camp. Yeah, I'll just let that marinate just a little bit. That's a lot of children. Anyway, what's amazing now, though, is we're having more kids attend a swamp camp outside of the U.S. per summer. They haven't caught up total, but per summer than here in the States. And that astounds me. I mean, I just think the little camp that could and see what's happening. So, but just, I'm just grateful and thank you very much. Isaac, I appreciate what you had to say today because what I want to do, and I may step out beyond this microphone. Is that all right? It's being recorded. Oh, great. Okay, all right. Got to move past that. No. All right, I'll remember that. I'll stay behind. But Isaac, I appreciated the thing you talked about with the footprints. Because I want to share with you a time, really, I think, a time that's current, but has happened for the last while, and you'll understand when I talk more about and share of where I feel like there's been one set of footprints. And I'm talking about times where it's hard, where there's pain, there's suffering, there's things that you didn't count on, there's things that you didn't script, there's heartache, there's disappointment, there's disillusionment maybe even in there somewhere. And, you know, I look over here and I think back when I was this age, and I can remember, you know, there was current heartache, meaning that it's what was going on with my family. I didn't think about the future much. And in fact, when I did think about the future, it was like, woo, Katie, bar the door, let's go. I'm off to the world and I'm going to have a great time. And I had a lot of idealism. And the world was there for me to change. And yet as I've gotten older, now I'm trying to get to the point where I simply say, God, thank you for the pain. That is hard. I'm not there yet. I mean, I can sit here and put it in my notes and I can go, God, thank you for the pain. But I want to get there. And that's a whole different, that's life. That's as you move from this section to this section, back to this section. You'll get, all right, anyway. And yet I'm really glad you're in here, because if you can learn this now and hear what I say, maybe you can understand some of the things I'm saying, but talk to other people. And this idea of suffering, I've come up with a definition for suffering. By the way, how many of you, just so I get a temperature of the room, how many of us have experienced pain, suffering? Think, okay, good deal. All right. See, not many hands here. Oh, come on. Now you have something. All right. You're going to raise your hand when I define it for you. Okay? Here you go. Here's the definition of suffering. Anything you don't want. Think about it. Now, some suffering is trivial. I don't want to stand in this line. I don't want to wash the dishes. I don't want to make my bed. I don't want to. But some is hard, and you just don't. Every fiber of your being, you don't want this. I'm not talking about like. I don't think we're meant to like everything in life. I have to accept it and embrace it. I have to grow through it. But when it comes to want, so that helped me with a definition. It helped me to understand the points in time and to relate to so many people and for them to relate to me. Because now when I say, have you ever had anything you don't want? Everybody raises their hand. Of course. So it's a part of life. And so I've been on this journey for the last several years. And again, I'll explain and put some context to that journey. And I've been trying to figure out how to be peaceful through the times that I don't want. How to even find an element of joy that not just I can hoard myself, but that I can give away. And I find it a both marvelous, inspiring, but tiring, and takes much effort just to get through. And so I've been trying to figure out how to find this recipe of peace. Now, I like to eat. I love, Jennifer's an amazing cook, but she loves to bake. That's her big thing. She likes to bake. And I'm really glad she doesn't bake that often. You know what I'm saying? All right. So kind of in a way to package this for you today, I've called it a recipe of peace. Because we will all face things we don't want. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 11. We'll get there in just a little bit. But if there was something you could eat, if there was something that I could give you, and I'm going to just call it cake, okay? Because I like cake. Right? Jennifer makes this great cake. It's called Carol's Sheet Cake. It is fantastic. You come over, it's awesome. Yeah. We used to, in our younger, back in those days that Tim was talking about, we'd be sitting around at 10 o'clock at night, and Jennifer and I would be like, man, I want some chocolate. We'd whip up because it's very easy to make, but it's good. Man, 45 minutes later, we're chowing down on cake, 11 o'clock at night. See, that's younger days. You don't do that now. Well, you can, but it just doesn't work out too well for you. All right. But I tried to come up with something that if I could eat it, if I could give it to you and you would eat it and find peace, would you eat it? Of course you would. Why? Because every one of us, we don't want pain. That's why we medicate in so many ways. And I'm not talking about useful medicines. I'm talking about that's why we entertain ourselves. That's why the porn industry is huge, $1 billion. We medicate. We find ways to escape. We find ways. And we live in a more affluent society. When I travel around and go to less affluent societies and see, you know, they still find their ways to medicate. Why? Because we all want to get rid of pain. So why can't we approach it in a godly way? That was my question. Because the pain that I'm feeling is not going to go away anytime soon. I don't think so anyway. And the older I get, the more I realize that any suffering, things that I don't want, are just going to be there, one way or the other. So I might as well figure this out. And so I've spent the last couple years, and that's really what I want to share with you. If you would, to give you some context, I'd like to share a couple of pictures with you. Oh. That one was there because we've already done that. Tim did that for me. Thank you. Next one. This is my children. Sam on the left, Nick on the right. I have two. She was born in 1993. He was born in 1996. And I was very excited to have, you know, Sam come along because I've always wanted a girl. I actually wanted four kids, but the longer that I had two, the less I wanted four. So, but I was excited about that first one. And I can remember wanting daddy's girl. I wanted, I even went to, what's it called, the sonogram? No, is that right? Ultrasound, yeah, sonogram, whatever. Anyway, that thing that goes, anyway, it's ultrasound. We went to it and to see, you know, what sex the baby was, and I didn't even go in. I just stood there and said, it's a girl, just go confirm it. Great, I got things to do. I was like, yeah, much to Jennifer's chagrin, get in here. Anyway, But I was that confident. And of course, we went to the ultrasound. There it was. There's a baby girl. And I was ecstatic. And I'll never forget those memories. I love it. Memories. You know, there's nothing like a newborn and you're laying on the couch. And, you know, I couldn't be involved in kind of feeding all that. But I could, at night, I could pick her up and I could put her right here and just cuddle. Oh. It's such a warm. And then as she grew up, you know, we spent time together and we would go out on dates. And then along came Nicholas in 1996. And, of course, you know, yeah, man, they spent a lot of time at our house. Man, the Lanes. And, you know, Nicholas was a boy. And, of course, now I had one of everything. My grandmother called that a rich man's family. One of everything. Woo! And there was something about that. There's something about having a boy. I don't know. There's just, And so time, next picture, time goes on, and then, you know, here's us. We got to go on a trip. I promise you, I don't have 18,000 slides that we're going to go through all my trip stuff. No. Just give you a little context. This I love this because of how beautiful it is. This is actually in Greece. My in-laws paid for us to go to Greece. Can you believe that? Marry well, guys, marry well. All right. But you forget about, I forget there's a beautiful sunset, and that was on an island called Santorini, one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. Why? Because look at the two beautiful ladies sitting there, standing there. I can't get past that. These are my girls. This is my girl. Next slide. About 4 years ago, Samantha started, and by the way, I'm sharing with you things that are all in public. She's fine. I've talked with her, and we're all good. Okay, so I'm not throwing her under the bus or anything like that, just so you know. In fact, this picture has a lot of significance for me. Because about 4 years ago, Samantha started having a lot of mental health issues. She tried to kill herself four times. She ended up being in the mental hospital four times. When the phone rings and you don't know what's about to happen, it's a scary thing. It's definitely something you don't want. And as time went on and as she began to talk more, she really began to struggle with just her faith and belief in God. Why would God make me with these issues? Why would God want me to feel this way? And her faith weakened, and then she came out and she said, "Dad, Mom, I want to let you know that I'm same-sex attracted." And that was a whole other level of something I didn't want. And this was a time where we went and just kind of went to my parents' house. My mom snapped that picture. I didn't even know it. And she handed it to me. And it's very dear to me because it was during that time where we were trying to figure out and deal with the pain, deal with the unknown, deal with the scariness, deal with revelations that, you know, to my shame, I didn't respond to when she first said that. You know what I told her? And this just blurted out. And I've apologized. I've groveled. My first thought was, well, I wish you would have told me you're pregnant. Yeah, sad. And that was a scary time. Next picture. I put this up because this is my all-time favorite picture of me and Sam. This is at our last daddy-daughter retreat. And yes, that's single girls. And yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I think I'm like, what am I hurting next? I don't know. But look at that look, and that that's the memory. That's the thing that I hold on to. That's my little girl, and we were dancing and had such a magical time that weekend. Next picture. It's a little dark. Sorry about that. It's this is Thanksgiving of last year. July 5th, 2015. Her name to Alexander Eli, cut her hair. She now lives in Colorado. I'm trying to figure out what pronouns to use because she is so in there that trying to he and to say, these are my two sons. And now the story goes from about her to about me, because where's my little girl? This is not what I scripted. And the pain is flooding in. And during this time, I have sometimes felt like I've gone absolutely nuts. I've gained 25 pounds. I've lost 28. I just about quit the swamp last March because I thought, I cannot do this. I can't go around. I cannot do this and deal with this. I have found myself in a fetal position in my kitchen just to go get a glass of water. I went to get a glass of water, and I saw something that she made. I started crying, and I laid there. Next thing I know, I'm bawling. Pain. Suffering. Thing I don't want. Now, we're not in a bad place. And by the way, we're trying to figure out what's normal. We're trying to go on. We're trying to learn. I'm learning a ton. I'm really learning a lot about unconditional love. I'm learning a lot about how to be godlike. I'm learning a lot about Jesus like I've never before. Do you realize, and this is free, it's not in my notes, that the only emotion assigned to Jesus, there's a lot of emotions that Jesus had, right? You can tell when he's exasperated, frustrated, you're killing me, guys. You know what I mean? He's exuberant. He's got a lot of emotion. The only one assigned to him, though, is sorrow. He was a man of sorrows, and yet he still was Jesus. And so I'm called to a level of righteousness right now that I can't. It's inspiring and challenging, sometimes overwhelming me. And thus, these thoughts have come out of this. And we're not in a bad place. We're all dealing with it. My thing is sorrow. Jennifer's is angry, and I'm sorry. And she told me to tell you, the reason she's not here is because she knew what I was going to talk about. We knew what we were going to talk about with the parents. And to be quite frankly, she said, I'm not sure I can handle it. Because we're still in the midst of this, even though it's been a couple years. She had friends. Samantha had friends that said, you know what, you should just ditch your parents. You know that they how they view you and how, the religious and how they view, you know, what's going on with you. And you know what she said? She said, are you kidding me? I hit the parent lottery. For which I praised God. And that inspires me even more. So despite all of that, I'm still left with finding peace through the pain and through what I don't want. I'm still left with days of crying and days of wondering, days of where do I go on? How do I go on? How can I give? It's like this pervasive, it's just there. And I imagine you have something like that too. And that's why I thought, let's have a vulnerable talk about how to deal with those things. And if you don't have those things quite on this scale or some scale that is just a weight to you, then just hang on. It's coming. Because that's life. And I'm not trying to scare you. It's just a fact. And yet, that's why I'm so grateful for the body. I'm so grateful for friends. I'm so grateful for the Word. So why don't we jump in and let me share with you this recipe. It's got three ingredients. Hebrews chapter 11. Did I already say that? Okay, thank goodness. All right. Verse 5. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists, and then he rewards those who earnestly seek him. The first ingredients of this recipe, you're going to go, well, duh, Jeff, is that God is real. And you're like, well, yeah, I wouldn't be here. Yeah, but you know what? There are things that happen in our lives, maybe that happen in your life, that make you question that. And so quit faking reality and say, maybe I'm doubting God here. Does he know what he's doing? Because the Bible says that I've got to believe he exists and he rewards. He's there. He's not going away. And sometimes events in life can make us, especially when we don't understand. Because why? His ways are higher than my ways and your ways. And so we want to sit there, and all of a sudden, now our entire spiritual existence is in question. Really? So God suddenly went away? No, this is like the flour. I mean, can you imagine cake without flour? What is cake without flour? I don't know. It's a bowl with something in it. I don't know. I mean, you can't have, this is a must. And I think what we have to do is, we've got to be real with that. Not just kind of force ourselves through it. I think maybe go back and wouldn't it be cool as a 30-year-old Christian to go, is God real? And go back and prove it again. How energizing would that be? How uplifting would that be? And then when we deal with younger people, there's a study done out of Cal State Fullerton, and they talked about what's the number one, they wanted to find out the number one reason 18, 19-year-olds leave church. And so they did this study. I learned about this at Orange. Remember? I think, were we there? Anyway, I learned about this. It was an incredible study. They did it across all demographics, ages, everything. They wanted to know, why did people around 18 leave church? And here are the two reasons. And they weren't necessarily one and two. They just were the top two reasons. One of the reasons was they didn't have relationships. Young people didn't have relationships with older people in the congregation. We'll just let that sit out there. That's interesting, huh? But the second reason that's more appropriate for us is they didn't feel like you let them doubt. Oh, we talked about this a couple summers ago, and we've talked about it. It comes up almost every week at camp somewhere. Because I'm a big proponent of quit faking reality, share your doubt, explore, seek, ask, go find your faith. Because God isn't running away. He's real as real gets. So let's let them ask the questions. Maybe you'll even in turn get a few of yours out there that come creeping up 20 years later when you find something you don't like in life and it makes you question God. And so that's why I had to go back. I literally had to go back and say, is God real? Because if he's not real, well, first of all, I'm not going to find much hope. But this is ridiculous because he doesn't know what he's doing. And this is where the anger part of me kind of got. And I kind of got humbled and I sat back and said, well, he's still real as I remember when I first became Christian. As real as I can honestly just remember, speaking of memories, I don't remember a time of not believing in God. I can't. And so therefore I'm learning to be thankful for the tough times so that I can go back and reaffirm what I believe. Because it starts there. There's no cake without that flour. And I think we've got to let people ask questions. We've got to have vulnerable conversations. You know, we try to treat each other in this way. It's like, well, I've been a Christian for 30 years, therefore I do not doubt. Really? Well, then I must be the only one. Last Saturday was my 30th spiritual birthday. That's cool. 30 stinking years. What? That's amazing to me. God is so faithful. So faithful. It's kind of unrealistic for me not to think that there might be times. And I hope as I get older and older that, yes, I can quickly deal with those doubts. But wasn't the first question in the Bible, did God really say that? So I believe that first question sets the tone of all of humanity. Satan doubts our own thoughts. Did God really mean for this to happen? Are you really a good dad? Did you not tell her how pretty she was enough or this, that, or other? I mean, I have all these things that went in my head because of this event. And an interesting question about that. Wouldn't it have been interesting if Adam and Eve would have just said, well, Satan, you know what? That's a really good question. Let's go ask God. I wonder that. And yet now we see why the Bible's important, because you're going to have doubts. And so just go, well, I don't know. Should I keep pure? Should I not do this? Well, I don't know. Let's go ask God. He's real. Let's just go ask him. That would have solved the whole thing. And Satan would have tucked his tail and went, come on, try it again. I mean, but we have to believe that God is real. We have to not doubt the doubters, but deal with the doubts and join their journey. And that's where we start. The second ingredient I'm going to introduce by asking you a question. How many of you believe that God is sovereign? Let me define sovereign, just in case there's unclarity. Sovereign means all powerful, do anything you want, anytime you want, however you want it, with whoever you want, why you want to do it. Doesn't matter. He can do anything. Does that clear it up? Did I cover all the whys, what, winds, and hares, and wiles? Okay, wiles and highs, hows. Anyway, sovereign. So here's my question to you. How many of you believe that God is sovereign, but he's not in control? You might be the only one, but if you believe it, raise your hand. How many of you believe he's sovereign but not in control? I'm going to reserve my judgment till I see what... Okay, you're processing it. I had to process this. I believe this wholeheartedly. And here's why. And I'm not trying to convince you of your belief. I'm just trying to let you see that there might be a purpose to why God gave us choice in the garden. Because he gave up control. You parents, you have control. Right? God, he gives you the Bible. Well, you think you do anyway. All right. I get it. I understand. Yeah, we think we do. But he gives us the Bible. He gives us people in our lives. He gives us brains to think. He gives us experiences and all that. But at the bottom line, we have the charge of raising our children. We have the charge of showing up to work. We have the charge of putting on whatever we want to put on. We have the charge of saying hi. Life is choices. There's a lot of control and choices. Otherwise, God would have made us robots. We'd all show up on Sunday morning. Oh, we're here to worship. God, you are great. I sing to thee. I will sing, because you're good always. I mean, how does that sound? He could have made us like that. But instead, he retains his sovereignty while handing over choices that we make. And why do I make that point? Because I believe that this is the yeast in my recipe. The ingredient is God is sovereign, and just because of the choices of other people does not relinquish that sovereignty at all, or even our own choices. And the choices were set up, why? So that we could, God could validate love. He could validate our love for him. Not just programmed, but by the choices that I make. You know what? Every day, Samantha, Xander, and I have chosen, by the way, to use the right pronouns, and I've chosen he, right meaning based on what he wants, and I've chosen to call him and Xander. You can see how hard it is. It's the most intentional thing I do every day. But my choice is that I'm going to show him unconditional love. And you might disagree with me. I've already had phone calls of parents who say, I can't believe you do that. And we got into some discussion. I said, well, this is my father's strategy. Let me tell you, though, that I don't condone what's going on. So as a director, as a camp director, as a, I don't know, someone in the public eye in a sort of kind of way, I don't condone this. But as a father strategy, yeah, I'm going to unconditionally love. That cost me my job or cost me favor with you, well, sorry. That's more important. And so I'm working hard. And you know what it's proving to her? I got the courage. In September, we went to a conference, and it turns out, you know, Xander just moved out to Colorado State to go to graduate school. Anyway, kind of all worked out where we could see him. And I built up the courage at the advice of somebody to say, how do you think I'm doing in the unconditional love category? I was afraid. I was afraid of the answer. I was afraid because I feel this gulf of separation. I feel like I'm trying so hard and failing not most of the time. And it was favorable. You're doing great. You're wanting to learn. You're wanting to accept, and I feel accepted by you. And I know it's hard. I was like, once again, praise God. Maybe this recipe is helping me here. But I have to go back to the sovereignty of God. It's the yeast that causes our cake to rise. It's what reminds me that I have faith. It's what gives my faith existence and purpose and substance. Otherwise, what's the use? And it has helped me to be able to deal with things like this. The fact that we live in a world where choices can make us go, why do bad things happen to good people? I did this with the teens one time. This was quite some time ago. Walked in and said, we're going to deal with this question. So I broke it down and I said, hey, so answer. How many of you can answer the question why things happen? Chirp, chirp. I mean, that's a little above our pay grade. We can say what happened. We can say how it happened. But most of life, we can't say why it happened. Now, you know, unless it's something that just with us, I get that, and our reasoning. But beyond our reasoning, why is way above our pay grade? So I threw it out. I said, great, now we're down to bad things happen to good people. And then we had this discussion about bad and good. In fact, I'm really trying hard to get rid of the word good in my language because it is so subjective. What's bad for me might be good for you. What's bad of this situation might be good. I don't know. This is a bad situation in my opinion. But in God's position, maybe it's, I've been able to be vulnerable and help a lot of people. People have come to camp and they've watched. They've come and said, we've watched you and Jennifer and how you've dealt with this situation. And they were more open because of something. And I thought, okay, well, maybe that's the good that's coming out of this. Then it's not a bad. I don't know what is bad and good. So now we're just down to things happen to people. Now we can start dealing with life because we have something to help us deal with the things that happen to us. And I can start asking practical, what can I do kind of questions. But that comes from understanding that God is sovereign. Is God dead? I mean, there's two Netflix movies out there, God is Dead or something like that. I watched one of them the other day. I was like, wow, okay, that's interesting. Why would he let things happen? It's amazing. Hebrews chapter 1. In the past, verse 1. In the past, God spoke to our ancestors through the prophets at many times and in various ways, but in these last days he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he appointed heir of all things. And through him also he made the universe. The Son is the radiance of God's glory and the exact representation of his being, sustaining all things by his powerful word. Grasp that for a moment. He sustains and makes the universe. I love science, I love the universe, I love all that stuff that happens out there as a chemistry major, and I think it all lines up with God. I don't think they're in argument, that's a whole nother lesson. Anyway, do you realize that the universe, all the stars are placed in a mathematical model such that you can tell where a star is going to be 5,000 years from now by a calculation. And you can tell where one was 5,000 years ago. That's how they navigate satellites and things through the universe. It's called Kepler's Law. Just look it up. It's amazing. And it's all mathematical. Now think about the implications of that for a second. God, first of all, had to make math. God bless him. Anyway, he had to make calculus and algebra. He had to create that, all the intricacies of that. Then he had to set every star so that it would match that formula. Are you grasping the hugeness of this? Yeah, I know. You're starting to get a little pain right here, and we'll all need Advil afterwards. That's the sovereignty of God. Do you think he doesn't know what's going on in our piddly little bitty lives? In fact, it's more apt that he'll overlook it. And thus David cried out and said, why are you mindful of me, mindful of us? And yet, his sovereignty shouts through the universe. Our belief in his sovereignty is directly proportional to the trust we have in him, therefore to the peace that we can have with the things we don't understand. And so spend some time grasping the sovereignty of God. The third ingredient. How many of you would eat cake without sugar? Oh, there's always one. Yeah, okay, all right. And if my dad were in the room, he'd raise his hand because he's diabetic, and I'd say, yeah, you just eat that fake sugar. Anyway, no, nobody, you know what cake without sugar is? It's a biscuit. I mean, if I want a biscuit, I'll order a biscuit. No, this is the sugar. Okay, Mark chapter 10. And this is a very familiar story, so I'm only going to read one little section of it. And this is why it tastes so good. This is why I can swallow it in the times where it seems the hardest. Truth is, swallowing things is pretty easy. It's the digesting that sometimes gets me with this whole circumstance. Verse 17, chapter 10. As Jesus started on his way, a man ran up to him and fell on his knees before him. Good teacher, he asked, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And it goes on from there. Rich young ruler, we know this. What must I do? Now imagine. You walk out of church, and you go to the parking lot, and you stop to get gas on the way home, and somebody walks up to you and falls down and says, oh my gosh, Mark, could you tell me how to get to heaven? What would you do? You'd suddenly forget to eat. You would just say, come on over. word, sit down. I remember days when Mark and I studied the Bible together. That was so fun. I mean, you'd sit down, you'd alter your day, you would say, come on, I can show you. I'll tell you how about Jesus, I'll tell you about the cross, I'll tell you about following him, I'll tell you about repenting. I mean, we know about things to teach people how to be a Christian. Well, what does Jesus do? Very interesting here. He gets stuck on a word. This guy wants to go to heaven, and Jesus is now going to get all into the semantics of the word good. Whoa, time out. Why did you call me good? Forget your salvation for a minute. Why did you call me good? And I've often wondered why. Because you see, here's the thing. I can believe God is real and he's sovereign, but what I'm going through ain't good. Doesn't feel good, doesn't taste good. And yet, God alone is good. Why did Jesus say that? Why? Well, so like all scholars, I went back and looked up the Greek word. And it's agathon, which means incorruptibly good. It cannot be tainted, messed with. You cannot do anything to alter the nature of it. And even Jesus said, while I'm in this body, I can be corrupted, but not God. And that's the sugar. That's the point at which God, Jesus takes this moment with this guy and he standardizes goodness. So if you want a definition so it wouldn't be so subjective, well then just turn to God because he's incorruptible. And so therefore, as things happen, as the painful things happen in our life, because pain is like a virus, what it will do is it will corrupt your ability to think that God is good. I don't want this, therefore God is not good. I don't want this, therefore God is mad at me. I don't want this, therefore God doesn't know what he's doing. I don't want this, therefore God is bad. And we spend a life going in and out based on what we're experiencing of God being good and bad. And Jesus said, let me just stop so that you can have a kind of peaceful salvation and say, boom. I am good. Now, like every recipe, when you do something new, you invite somebody over, right? Or you try it on your family. So let's try this recipe out. If God is not real, then why are we here? That's kind of an easy one. Let's just go home. Let's enjoy the Falcons or whoever your team is. Or let's go to the lake or whatever it is you want to do. So that's kind of a given. Start there. Pour the flour in. But what if God is real? Not what if. He's real. Okay, and he's good, but he's not sovereign. What kind of God Almighty would that be? How much could I trust the things that I don't love or understand? You think I'm messed up now with a God who is sovereign? I mean, imagine trying to follow a God, and many people do. Oh, he's real, but he ain't that sovereign. He might be a good daddy, even the big beard all up in heaven and just like Santa Claus, but he isn't too sovereign in my life. Well, no wonder we're just all over the place. There's no peace. So what if God is real and he's sovereign, but he's not good? Well, we've had some examples of that in history, have we not? Across the pond, little mustache, thought he was real and sovereign, and look how that turned out, and it happens all over the world. People are real, they're not that good, and they impose some sort of sovereignty. What kind of God would that be? But no, you pour all this together, and you see what happens is we put it into the oven of life. And so now we've got this cake and this recipe. And so now we have things that come along and the temperature rises. Sometimes it goes down to 175, sometimes to 350. Other things happen in our life, but I still got to come back to the recipe that God is real, that God is sovereign, and that God is good. And by that, by eating that, then I can find peace for some sort of feast of faith. I can move on. And yeah, I might have my moments of crying. An example of this, real quickly, is not just my life. Think of Abraham. Think of being told to kill your son. And then what 3 days? What was his 3 days like? Boy, he had some starlight devotionals, did he not? Whoa. I mean, he's out there going, what? I got to kill my son. Are you kidding me? And yet he shows up after 3 days. I think he ate some of this recipe. He had to decide, is God, well, God is real. God's sovereign. He told me to do that. Therefore, I'm going to obey. And guess what? He reasoned out of faith that God was good. And that's why he came up with the idea that he told his servants once they got there. This is just flat amazing to me. Servants, stay here. Me and Isaac, we're going to go over here. We're going to worship. Then we will return. Did you get that? You're probably thinking about we will return. I'm talking about the worship. I can worship even during suffering. That's only if I understand God is real and God is sovereign and God is good. So whatever you're experiencing today, whatever you're going through, whatever your I don't want is, I ask you to come back to these three ingredients and eat some of this recipe and allow your situation to digest and to marinate along with that. And you too, and together, we'll make it to heaven. We'll do it with some level of joy that we didn't think would happen. And we'll do it sitting back and watching. I carry Sam's Bible everywhere I go, because one day I'm going to give it back to her. And that's my reasoning of faith. Thank you very much.